Hello, I'm Kara Gard, and welcome to Tea Time with Tech Marketing Leaders.
I'm your host, Kara Gard. So grateful you're all here with us today. I am talking to Tara Switzer. Thanks to the amazing Tara Pollock.
She's awesome.
She's Tara is a senior director and product marketer at Community Brands. She's been there, folks, for 5.5 years. We're going to unpack and figure out why that is, because that's unbelievable. That company must be doing something right. We're going to figure out what that is in a second here. Tara is a resident market expert, borderline obsessed competitive sleuth, which we're going to lean into real hard in a minute. Marketer, product marketer, and executive for competitive intel and the latest market sentiments and trends. She's an experienced manager, adept to motivating teams and individuals in successful product marketing and marketing initiatives, develops effective internal and external partnerships. She's an excellent problem solver, negotiator, coupled with strong project management and planning skills. We all need a Tara on our team. Tease there. Tara on our team. Let's do it. Tara, I'm so
Awesome.
grateful you're here.
Great. I'm excited to be here and talk about one of my favorite topics, competitive enablement.
It's gonna be awesome. If you're here with us live, please comment and let us know that you're here because I can't see you otherwise. And then we look forward to having your questions so that we can answer them, because that's the beauty of being live, is that we can do that. It's pretty magical.
Exactly.
Cool. Tara, I just sort of gave a high level. This is Tara. Welcome to the show. But why don't you tell us your story? What do you do, and how did you get there?
Awesome. So I have been at Community Brands for 5.5 years. It is the longest job I've ever had in my life. But I started as an individual contributor doing product marketing and kind of worked my way up to leading our product marketing team for our division. But how I got into product marketing is actually kind of unique. So right out of college, I started doing marketing for a restaurant company. So this was a while ago, very like old school direct mail, in-store promotions, like email marketing was just kind of starting out. Yes, I'm dating myself. But I always wanted to work in nonprofits. And so I was able to have a stint of my career as a professional fundraiser and volunteer management. And then now I get to kind of combine the best of both worlds in my background. So product marketing for a tech company that specializes in technology for associations, nonprofits, and K through 12 schools. So it's nice to kind of blend those two backgrounds together.
Yes, you have quite the eclectic background, which is astounding. And I loved following on your little LinkedIn journey there. Can you tell us specifically about Community Brands and what's so magical that you have been there for so long? It's sort of unheard of in the marketing world to be there for 5.5, going on 6 years.
Yes. So one of the things, first off, I think one of the great things about Community Brands is that, we're tech for change. Like every single one of our customers is making a difference. They're either, an association that is developing a code of ethics and standards for professions, or they're nonprofits that are, helping people in their community. Or, K through 12 schools that are educating our kids and the next generation of and the people who are going to take care of me when I'm old one day. So our customers are just amazing, which is great. And then I think the other part of it is that, you're really able to kind of develop your own path here. There were things that I was really passionate about that I was able to dig into. To grow my skill set in, and then eventually make programs out of it for our division. So I think that's really kind of the great things about Community Brands.
I need you to meet. Do you know Peter Wheeler?
I do not.
Oh, I'm going to make that introduction. It's going to be magical. Okay. He's all about, he worked at Okta, but it was very much on the for good side, like empowering folks, giving them the right tools from a nonprofit standpoint to like stand up and like get going. It's going to be magical. I can't wait. Peter, maybe you're listening and you're going to reach out to Tira. It's going to be great. We're all human, and even in the magical world of brands that we love working for, things are still sort of in our way, making our lives hard. So what is it for you right now? What's one challenge you're currently facing?
I mean, the most immediate challenge I'm facing is performance reviews are due tomorrow, and I still have a few to do. But I would actually say the kind of bigger challenge really is the same that I think all product marketers face every day. And it's even more amplified if you are a player coach like I am. But product marketing has a really big wheelhouse. So a lot of, you know, the biggest challenge that we face every day is, you know, how do you balance all the things that have to be done and give everything enough time? Like, am I spending enough time on competitive enablement? Am I, you know, spending enough time on buyer support needs that sales is requesting? You know, am I spending enough time on messaging and positioning that demand gen needs and, you know, win-loss interviews? So that striking that balance of that huge wheelhouse that has to be done every day. And again, I think that's just a challenge of product marketing in general. And all my product marketers listening are probably like, yes, every day I think that.
Gotta keep the balls in the air.
Exactly.
Yeah, you wear a lot of hats as product marketers, as I've been learning. I'm on more of like the project on the marketing demand side. And there's certainly, you know, a lot of hats, but I feel like we get a little bit more wiggle room in terms of support systems. Like we get our marketing managers who could do a whole bunch of stuff. And we get our VPs who sort of like manage the marketing managers. And then we get, you know, the CMO. So where I feel like product marketers, not that they get the short end of the stick, there's just a little bit more expected in terms of the hats they have to wear and all the things they have to know in terms of all the moving parts to keep it all going in the right direction.
Yes, and all the teams that you collaborate with asking you for stuff. So it's like, you know, it's marketing and we sit in marketing and sale, and we sit under sales. So like that's always top priority. But then product wants some things and customer support needs some things. And
you are you're the connector because you're the enabler, which we are going to. Oh, I'm so excited to unpack this. You are particularly a competitor enabler. So talk to me about why you think paying attention, well, I don't know if it's paying attention, but there's something about understanding your competition that's important. So what is that for you?
So for me, why competition matters, like why you should pay attention to them, it has nothing to do with like, oh, like, are they, you know, are we looking to copy them or are they copying us? Really, it's about reducing strategic risk and increasing revenue opportunities. So paying attention to your competitors, your up-and-coming competitors, really helps you have this deep understanding of what has happened, what is happening right now, and what may happen in the market. So by paying attention and knowing kind of past, present, you're able to think a little more into the future about how their moves are going to affect the business. So again, going back to that, reducing strategic risk and increasing those revenue opportunities.
Let's unpack that for a second. So when you're saying strategic risk, what are risks to you in if you don't pay attention to your competitors?
I mean, product is always a huge risk that they can innovate faster, innovate in a different way that really brings differentiators to the market. That's always, I think, one of the biggest risks. We live in a world of tons of M&A activity. So, you know, really paying attention to those partnerships, those kind of early indicators that there could be some M&A activity on the horizon, and thinking through how is that going to affect our business? Will it be a risk or will it not be? Does it give us a competitive advantage? And then also you can kind of see, like, are they starting to go after different markets? So will they maybe no longer become a competitor, or are they like coming full board onto where you are?
There's so many questions. Okay. Let's start with up and coming. You mentioned that up and coming competitors was ideally what you should be looking at. Up and coming, meaning they're like slightly behind you, like one step, or like you're in line. Can up and coming mean that they are a bit bigger than you and ahead, but they're doing different things? What does up and coming mean?
Up and coming can be everything, right? Like, competitors come in all shapes and sizes, and your super obvious competitors are the ones doing a very similar product, right? You're coming up against them in deals, you know who they are. I think of up and coming competitors in a couple different ways. One being maybe just smaller orgs who don't have the market share that you do, but that may also mean that they can move a lot quicker, innovate a lot faster. So they're good to pay attention to because they're most likely learning from the mistakes you've made. So you have those kind of up and coming. You have some maybe adjacent industries who, not really a direct competitor today, but if they added XYZ to their product, then they're like full on competitor. I think that up and coming competitors could also be your vendors and your partners. I would say vendors and partners is something we see growing in the nonprofit space of becoming a competitor. But yeah, it's really your entire ecosystem, because just one movement could completely change where they sit in comparison to you in competition.
Vendors and partners, keep your friends close, but your partners closer.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot of frenemy action.
Yeah, I would imagine, right? Like, you're all working together, but then we're stealing a little bit from one another, learning mm-hmm. and growing, and then end up competing. That's a tough world to live in, but also a necessary evil.
Right.
Regard.
Exactly.
This feels like a lot to follow between the types of up-and-coming companies you need to pay attention to, as well as how to reduce your risk factor. When you're following competitors, what sort of your, how many do you generally try and follow? Like, the list could go on, but I imagine you try and.
It could 100% go on. So if you are able to invest in competitive enablement software, it automates a lot for you. And it is fabulous. And we have luckily been able to invest in that in the last several years. But when I started at Community Brands, it was very manual. And there, I'm part of a community called Healthy Competition with just a bunch of CI folks in it. And the majority of them are all doing it manual. And it does take a lot of work, but you get used to it and you kind of know like what you're looking for. But I would say, you know, some of kind of the top things that I look for when following somebody. Obviously, you look at their website, which is going to tell you positioning, messaging, you know, what are their differentiators? Who's their target market? What news are they like super excited about and shouting about? Review sites for what their customers and staff love or don't love about them. I pay close attention to 3-star reviews. 1s and 5s are outliers. They're either ecstatic fans or they 100% hate someone. And if you're giving a 1 or 5, you're giving a very biased opinion. So take review sites with a grain of salt. I will say that. But 3s are my favorite because they're a little more, you know, even keeled in their emotion that they're putting into it. I also look at content strategy, you know, like what trends are they talking about? Do they have like in-depth product breakdowns, case studies? You add to that, you know, the digital landscape of keywords and AdWords. And then of course your staff, your team, that's a huge source of competitive intel. Your SDRs, customer success, AEs, SEs. SEs are great. You know, what are they hearing? You also, again, have to take it with a grain of salt, though, because it is a little bit of telephone game. A prospect told them who then told you. So you do need to kind of validate that information or just realize like, hey, this is rumor on the street. Mm-hmm. And then I would say my last thing that I'll mention and one of my favorite things to also look at besides review sites is career pages. Where are they investing in staff and where are they seeing turnover? Also, you can see, are they like mandating back to the office? Gives you a little bit of information for a recruitment campaign talent acquisition.
Yeah.
But also can tell you a lot about the business, you know, like if all of a sudden they have like, you know, a bunch of QA positions available, like they have some issues most likely, and they're investing in that area because they need to clean it up. So what FUD can the sales reps put in, you know, as they're going through that journey? So yeah, just career pages can tell you a ton.
Yeah, this is, I love how much you're looking at. Yay for software that can help you.
Yes.
Yes. And how many competitors are you, like, is it 3 to 5? Is it 10? Like, especially if you're doing this manually, I imagine you like would have like veer in. So how are you staying focused, not getting distracted by the, you know, shiny objects that show up and decide that they're going to be a competitor for a minute?
So I would, when I was doing it manually, I definitely had top three that I stayed on top of. And, you know, maybe two or three up and coming that I maybe checked on every other month, once a quarter, you know, wasn't spending a ton of time, but at least had some.
Yeah. Yeah. And from a, now that you're using a tool that's helping you tremendously from relieving a lot of that manual pain, two questions there. One is the number increased from 3 to 5?
Oh, it's hugely increased. Probably 10 times.
Wow. Okay. And my second question is, what's your favorite go-to tool? Not that we're trying to like, you know, broadcast which tool you should use, but it's just helpful to know like where to start for people who've mm-hmm. never even known that there was like a competitor tool management system right out there.
So we have been very loyal customers to Clue with a K, and They're amazing. Their product is great, but their staff is even more amazing. They're a true partner in our success, which is fabulous.
So you have all this data that you're sitting on. Nothing's yes. more glorious than having too much data. Champagne problems, y'all, having too much data. Right. So how do you sit? First of all, how do you sift through that data? Does it go like, there's things that you mentioned that you're looking for. I would separate this, things you're looking at versus things you're looking for. So you look at their website, you look at their company page, you look at what the staff is saying and career pages and content strategy. You mentioned some things that you're looking for, such as the 3-star reviews versus trends, case studies, and those sort of things. But like, what's the intel that you sort of keep an ear to the ground for that's going to help you make decisions?
So part of it, you know, you have all this data, mm-hmm. but all this data on its own is just like a great FYI. Like, okay, great. Like, that's good to know. But someone has to add perspective and insight into that data collected for it to mean something. So like, if I'm looking at a piece of intel, like, what does this tell me? Like, what does this mean for the competitor? What does it mean to us? And what does it mean to the market? And if some of it is just FYI, like, we don't usually share that information. It's just like, okay, this is good for us to know and to like monitor. But I'll go back to like the QA example. Not only is that information for sales, but it's like, hey, product team, they're like, our competitor is investing in XYZ. Like, let's talk about what that means. And then we can add that like perspective and insight to it, because it's that perspective and insight that's going to enable the business to make a decision or prepare for something.
I think that's important. So there's two things you said. I'm going to write this down so I don't forget it. So, monitor versus action is something I heard in there, right? So you're generally sort of like, it's like all those lovely social media tools we had back in the day that I feel like maybe are used, but probably not, as, you know, the social listening tools, which we, you know, we were, anyway, feels a little bit like that, but on a grander, more important scale from a monitoring standpoint. So you're really keeping an ear to the ground on all this sort of information that's happening, and then when anything sort of strikes a tune or jumps out of beat, it's easy to see and say, well, why did all this content jump around this keyword for this client? What are they, did they just launch a new pay, not client but competitor, did they just launch a new product? What's going on over there? There's some news breaking. And then you can sort of like spider web the story of what they're all of a sudden talking about. That's why I compared social media. Versus action, when that spidering happens and you know to go do something. So it sounds like you're not always necessarily doing, I mean, depending on how many competitors you're watching, you could be doing something all the time. But if you're only looking at 3 to 5 and you're just paying attention, you're not making action until they're making an action.
Right. Or you start seeing kind of trends, right? Maybe 2 or 3 competitors are kind of going, you know, kind of doing the same thing, and we're not paying attention to that at all, right? Like, hold on, like, everyone's kind of over here and we're like way over here. Like, should we be? Is this a risk, or is this actually like a huge revenue opportunity? Like, you know, they're actually 5 steps behind, or they're 5 steps ahead of us. So it's monitoring on the regular so that you can identify those trends to be able to make those perspectives and insights. And then, you know, other times it's just like, you know, someone comes out with news that's like, okay, someone's a competitor to us now. Like,
yeah, you know, prepare. Who I think does this? Let's talk about folks who do this really, really well. And why they're, while they're industry disruptors and maybe category creators, I think this is where like category creation becomes really interesting. I think Apple's really good at this, where they sort of sit back and they sort of like watch the, you know, the field of where Oculus and Meta are sort of playing, and they go, no, there's power to VR, but this ain't it.
Right.
So we're going to go over here and call it something totally different. Yeah. Spatial computing, and disrupt everything, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they aren't really first to anything. And this is where paying attention to competitors is really powerful. I think there's a lot of talk in the industry about whether you pay attention or you don't pay attention. Don't get caught up in it. Don't worry about it. Like, you do you. Think about your differentiators. Make sure you're, you know, bringing that to the space and not getting too caught up in like what your competitors are doing. And it sounds like maybe, but if you can pay attention to what they're doing and monitor it the right way, then you can sort of like be Apple.
Exactly. You can do that. And also like, you can just be, you can already be on the defense knowing that, hey, this is probably going to come. Like these are trends that we see a competitor doing. We're still like in this lane and this is still like our differentiator, but you'll be well prepared to respond to it. And if you're not paying attention, the other thing is that I would, some people may hate me for saying this, but in the big scheme of software, whatever category you're in, most orgs check all the same boxes, right? It's how that box is checked, which makes really the difference. So if you have maybe one or two boxes that your competitor doesn't, and then they're, you're not paying attention to them, and then they have it, like you could have just lost all your differentiation, all your talking points, all your messaging, and like you have to like scramble and be reactive. Whereas if you kind of knew what was going on, you had a heads up, you can start preparing, you can start working with your product team to be like, hey, like eventually these differentiators aren't going to be a differentiator. Like, what's our next one?
It's kind of like when you're at the forefront of things until you're not. So it's like exactly. All those companies like myself who were remote first pre-COVID for the longest time. And it was a differentiator. Come work from home, come build your own schedule. Like you've got, you know, no more commutes because who needs that sitting in traffic right. Forever? And then COVID happened. Everyone remote, and this is no longer a differentiating talking point.
Right.
So, or it is, but it's the sense of like, we know what we're doing. We're ahead of the game. We have this right systems and processes. We're built on remote. So work for a company who doesn't micromanage you, right? So there is sort of different ways of thinking about it. But if we didn't pivot in that language and we just kept saying, but we're remote first, but we're
exactly.
Well, everyone's remote first.
But think about like if you had a sales team of 50 people, like that small tweak of messaging then has to be like a training and it has like it's all the these like kind of massive things that you have to do to make sure everyone's like talking the same talk.
So let's talk about the benefits of this then, because I think that's important. This feels like a lot of work. So everybody's probably a little like, oh my gosh, why on earth would I invest so much energy into this? I will say to my cybersecurity friends that it is a growing industry and it's fantastic. But there's a lot of you now. So I would sit in and lean in on this one. I do think talking more about those value points is really helpful. So we talked a lot about risk, you know, diminishing the risk of that. What are, and you talked about some of the types of risks in terms of strategic risk of making sure you're differentiating M&A partnerships. And you just mentioned one. What other, why is this so, like, what if you don't, not that I want to add fun to the conversation, but I think this is kind of like, I can do that later. I can get to it at some point.
So, you know,
that's
really
a good point. A lot of people, you got to change messaging. That's huge.
Yeah, it's huge. And it's an investment of time. So if you have a program, you're paying attention on the regular, you know, you kind of hopefully diminish some of those kind of reactive things. But some of the like really big benefits is that, you know, your sales team can, you know, really understand the pain points of current customers when they're trying to like displace the status quo. So if you're, you know, in a deal and you're up against the incumbent, like you can have really great talking points, value benefits. You know exactly the pain that that customer is going through. So it really helps the sales team and marketing content like really focus on the pain that you know those customers are having. It really helps the sales team be prepared for objection handling. Like, this is what the competitor is going to say about us. Like, you should be prepared to reframe the conversation, you know, ask questions, reposition, you know, whatever it may be for that objection handling, but no, having them prepared and polished on what is going to be said about us, what objections our competitors have put in their mind. It also helps the sales team plant landmines, you know, plant a seed of doubt in that prospect's mind. Like, oh, you should ask whoever XYZ, because we've heard, you know, that's kind of a pain point. So why don't you ask them about that in your next conversation? Onboarding hugely decreases onboarding time for new marketing and sales team members. Because they have information, especially if they're coming from a different industry, like, just that really prepares them to be successful. And then, of course, just like differentiator messaging throughout your entire, you know, marketing lifecycle, all your content, all your campaigns can really focus on your strengths, what you do well, and what you do well over the competition.
Yes, I think this is all really important, and I don't know that we know, like, it can feel just so overwhelming. So where do you mentioned where you start in terms of the things that you look at, and you mentioned that it's really manual. Paint us, and it might sound really raw and hard, but just hang in there with us, folks. Paint us a picture, Sierra, where, like, is it a spreadsheet and you have your competitors in one, you know, in all the rows, and then columns? Is it a document? Like, how do people bring this to life in a way that they can manage it if they're doing it, if they're trying to start with their top three competitors and they're just trying to get started?
So it's definitely a conversation we have a lot in one of the CI groups I'm part of. Spreadsheets are definitely probably most wildly used, you know, because you can keep track of, you know, screenshots, URLs, the date it was received, you know, what it meant, et cetera. And then you kind of have that historical knowledge that you can go back on. I am pretty much obsessed with decks. So I always used a PowerPoint in mine, and lots of screenshots and dates, so that I could kind of have a historical representation. So since we started automating our competitive information, I don't update my deck anymore. But it's valid from 2018 to 2021. So I still reference it a ton, and it's a gazillion slides long.
I believe it.
But I would say kind of whatever works for you as an individual. But I would say spreadsheet is definitely what I hear people use most. I personally loved PowerPoint. And then I will say I collected my data in PowerPoint, but then I presented it to the team in Word. So just a document that was just a write-up of the competitor. And at the top, it said this was the date it was last updated. And, you know, it's just kind of like some overview information, some strengths, some weaknesses, you know, talk tracks for the sales team, kind of detailed product info for product team, But just one easy doc that people could, you know, easily scroll through was how I presented it to the consumers of the information.
So you sort of had your raw data in a presentation. Did you do it by competitor, or did you do it all in one presentation?
I did it all in one, and then I just had like a transition slide, you know, that was like next competitor.
Hence the gazillion slides. Exactly. Yes, I can imagine. I can totally imagine that. And then you sort of like boiled it down. Did you ever compare? Did you keep them all siloed, like competitor one, competitor two, competitor three? Did you ever do like a versus, like us versus these folks, or did you try and keep it like a little less us versus them? How was sort of your approach in when you did present it to the team? Was it an us versus them, or was that was it just like, here's the competitor, here's what they're doing, here's what we need to care, why or why not?
So I didn't do so much like us versus them, but like, you know, competitor A's strength is, you know, XYZ. And if that was a differentiator for them and they owned that, like we said that, like, this is a differentiator and this might be a point where you need to get out of a deal if this is like super important to them. But then there were other times it'd be like, hey, this is their strength, but also this is the weakness in their strength, and this is how we compete against that. And I think part of that is to, for me, I think it was really important for us, like competition is good, competition is healthy, and we should have a positive mindset about competition, not a negative. So as opposed to kind of us versus them, I tried to make it a little more positive of like, hey, they do this great. And you know what? They do it better than us, and that's fine. We can make up in it in this way. Or like, if this is super important, tell the prospect, like, we're not the fit for you. Like, you should talk to them. Thank you. Have a great day. Doesn't fit you, call me back.
I think that's a way more authentic way to do it.
Yeah.
I don't know that you could do it without knowing what you're up against in terms of where they're competitive, like knowing what somebody's, I feel like that just, and in the world that we're in right now, that just plays such an important part of not trying to sell for the sake of it, yes. But being really like, it sounds like this is what you need. It sounds like this company has what you need. Like, you should go test them out. We're here if it doesn't work, but based off of alignment, that's your best bet. I mean, so many people I've turned around and said, okay, this isn't going to work for this project, me working with you, but because you gave me that sound advice and it turned out perfectly, I'm going to turn around for the next thing and come back to you. Like, the trust that just builds in the long run. I know from a short-term standpoint, it's really painful, y'all, but from a long-run standpoint, yeah.
Well, also, it keeps from just a, you know, unsatisfied customer that's then going to hurt your NPS. It's going to hurt your CSAT. It's going to hurt your online reviews. And it could lead to a debook. So then everybody spent all this time for something that we know that we actually don't do well.
So how do you integrate, like, you collected all this data, you've analyze some malarkey out of it. You've created a Word doc that sums it up so nicely. You've presented it to the team. How do you actually get it ingrained in the organization where it's actually being used and it's useful versus just being like, I presented this thing to you and now you're going to totally ignore it, because unless we have a system and process otherwise, that's generally what happens.
Yes. So we took the stance of hype the hell out of it. Like, every single meeting, we talk about it. Every single, like, we have a chat dedicated to competitive intelligence. We keep communication going there. We constantly ask people for feedback. And we talk about it all the time. So I think that has been like the key to building this like culture of compete, because A, everyone feels like it's part of their job. Like, yes, I want to like give some intel. I want to be part of it. And it keeps it front and center that people are like, oh yeah, like this is where I go to like get this information. Here's where I can get it. So yeah, it's just literally for 3 years, I think we haven't shut up about it. Probably four. But that was really the biggest, that I think is the biggest thing that you have to do.
And what are the, like you say, so you've been spouse here 4 years, you've been there for over 5 years. So what has been the shift for you in the organization in terms of how it's been able to forward its mission in actually paying attention to its competitors and having it ingrained in the culture and organization? What's the outcome of that?
I think it's really like, I think it's a positive culture. Like people are excited to talk about our differentiators. They're, you know, really polished in, you know, kind of our talk track, our messaging and positioning. So it's really turned into a really positive culture of, you know, competition is good and, you know, we know our stuff. And, you know, anytime, you know, someone new comes up, you know, it's like, hey, do you have any information on them? Or, you know, can you tell me X, Y, Z? You know, just yesterday, you know, a GM asked in chat, like, tell me the difference between, you know, competitor A and us, this like one product feature. It's like, here's your quick answer, two sentences. Like, you can also find details here.
God, I love having the answer. Ah, it feels so good. And my last question for you, Tyra, what, like, you've been doing this forever, it seems. You're totally ingrained. I loved your little caption around like on LinkedIn about you being like competitor sleuth. You clearly like love it. What is it for you?
So there's this meme about CI about like what, you know, like what my parents think I do, like what society thinks I do, what do I think I do? Like, I 100% think that I am James Bond. But I am so not.
CIA. I was totally disappointed.
Yeah. I will say though, I don't know if it's because like I'm a ginormous true crime fan. Like, I love research. But you do have to have a mindset for it. Like, you have to enjoy doing it. Otherwise it's just like a really mundane task. But you just get to see like all this information, and then you're able to like see trends and be like, okay, like this is what I anticipate this means. Like, this is probably a future M&A activity coming in the future. If it doesn't happen, then, you know, X, Y, Z. So, you know, you get to kind of come up with some hypothesis of like, what does this mean? And that's what they are. They're hypothesis, just kind of based on, you know, trends and kind of what's going on in the market. But it's fun to, you know, identify those, come up with them, and, you know, present them to your team, to executives, and talk about it. So yeah, I clearly don't like it at all.
No, what I'm hearing from you about what you like about it is, it sounds like you feel like you're on the cutting edge. You can sort of see the forest for the trees because you've captured enough information. Your brain's made enough connections about where things might be going that you get to sort of place your bets intentionally and make really smart, help the organization make really smart, pivotal decisions and not lose sight of what it's there to do, but also like what everybody else on the outskirts competitor-wise is also trying to do at the same time, and how you can sort of keep ahead and also break out of the mold.
Exactly.
As well.
Exactly. Cool. That was a great summary.
I like you. I love to capture all the data, then dissect it, and then spit it out. So yeah. I'm with you. I'm a researcher. This is why I have a podcast. This is is I get to see those trends firsthand and everything you're saying. I like want to go help our clients dig into their, like, I could just see my brain going off and wanting to do this. I feel the power of it and I'm excited. It is a tricky world. Last piece of advice for folks, if you give it, in terms of being careful. It sounds like a bit of a balancing act. You guys have a dedicated team that does this, so everybody else can worry about other stuff, but it sounds like a very easy black hole to sort of like fall into. How do you either yourself or help the team not get caught up in the shiny objects of it all, the competition of it all, but like just use it as data and information to move forward?
Yes, it definitely can take you down a black hole and do like all day long. We do not have anyone dedicated to it full time. So our product marketing team, competitive intel is part of their job. So, you know, depending, you know, it's probably 15, maybe 20% of someone's time. And really, I think what helps us is time boxing it. You know, like I do a little bit every single morning when I wake up. I, you know, do a kind of touch base in the middle of the day, and I do a little bit at night as well. I probably do it much more than some people on my team, which is perfectly fine because it's just my jam. But we do have, you know, blocked out time on calendar to make sure that there's time dedicated every week. So I would say time box yourself so that you don't go down a huge rabbit hole. And then the last thing that I would say is be respectful. Don't be an a-hole while you're doing it. SCIP, which is the Strategic Competitive Intelligence Professionals Association, they do have some ethics around collecting intel. So if you're going to do it, I highly suggest reading the ethics.
Yes.
But really it comes, you know, don't click on a competitor's ad excessively, like, no, that's wrong. Just don't do that. You know, if you're going to download content, say who you are and that you're from a competitor, you'll be surprised. Almost the majority of people will allow you to have their content. Some people won't. Some people, you know, block your email address, which is fine. Like, good for them. I tried to download content from a competitor the other day, and it was a checkbox, and it was like, I don't work in this, you know, industry, and I'm not using this for competitive intel. And I was like, well, I can't click that. So on to the next.
That is trust right there.
So yeah, there's, you know, just if you're going to do it right, do it the right way. And I think that SCIP's code of ethics is there's nothing wild and crazy in there. It's, you know, mostly talking about kind of old school corporate, like you can't go digging in people's trash, things like that. But the
treat
big part
others
of
how
it,
you'd want to be treated.
Exactly.
School ground rules, right?
Yes. And I will say, I did not know there were a code of ethics when I started doing it. So I've so definitely helpful. Evolved as I've come along. But yeah, I didn't know it existed when I first started doing CI.
Oh my gosh, it's amazing though. I love that there's a code of ethics, and I love even more that you follow it, because there is like about all those things that you listed in terms of like telling, there's a CIA mentality here in terms of sleuthing and stalking, and there's a line.
That's right, there is a line.
I love that. Tyra, I'm so grateful for this conversation. Before we go, I'm gonna end the conversation there because that was perfect. But before we go, I do want to know more about you, because you're more than a marketer and product marketer and competitive sleuther. Which one am I gonna ask? I have three that I ask. I'm gonna ask about your hobbies. Given like the change in the world and COVID and working from home and that period of time where like we had too much time on our hands for the first time in ever, did you pick up any new hobbies, and are you still doing them?
So I did not pick up any hobbies during COVID besides
Fair.
not driving. That one has definitely stuck. I barely ever drive. But I would say when I'm not working, we have a 2.5-year-old dog, Puddle. He's a pit bull. He's adorable. We play a lot of wall ball in the yard. So that's every afternoon. And then my husband and I live in the middle of wine country. So we go to a lot of wine tastings. We try to try a new place once a month.
I mean, what a great hop. I mean,
Yeah.
I would have been mad at COVID if it shut that down on me.
Right.
Oh, that is, and Puddle, we have Otis. We have a cat, Otis, and he's more playful than than my last cat. He like one he gets mad if you don't play with him. He's like, why are you not playing with me right now? What is wrong with you? Yes.
So I did a webinar this morning and then I had this afternoon. So he's been like locked out of the office and he's kind of like, what's up, mom?
Otis will come to my door and like scratch at it real hard. And I'm like, I hear you, buddy. Like, I can't open it because you will literally like sit right here.
Right.
Oh, yes, pet parents. I love it. Tyra, this was awesome. Thank you so much for joining me. If you'd like to
Thank
hear
you.
more from Tyra and Community Brands, you can find them on LinkedIn. Link will be in the show notes post the show. So grateful for you joining me.
Thank you. It was a great conversation.
Thank you for listening. If you found this episode helpful, please like, subscribe, and share. This episode is brought to you by MKG Marketing, our agency that accelerates the mission of B2B tech brands via SEO, digital ads, and analytics. It's hosted by me, Carrie Gard, CEO and co-founder of MKG Marketing. Music mix and mastering done by the amazing team. And if you'd like to be a guest, DM me. Let's hang out. I'd love to hear from you.